Session number 11357.
Harry Clark, Cradle Farm.
We had no fuel left to make a cup of tea, and we were desperate for something to drink, so we went without. But later in the day, we decided to stay in the barn and spend the night there to try and catch up on some lost sleep. We were all fairly exhausted after the two previous days and two nights events, and so we took it in turns to get our heads down, two on watch and two sleeping, and we had a really good sleep. Later in the evening of that day, which was now the 8th of June, we decided that we would have something to eat, and we took out our tins of emergency rations, which was a small sealed tin that contained some very, very dark chocolate, which we were forbidden under pain of death to touch unless ordered to. So we said, to hell with orders, we've got to eat. So we delved into these tins and ate this dark chocolate, which was very, very filling. It certainly done the trick. And then throughout that night, we'd seen no sign of any movement at all in the area of the farm. We just had one man by the door, one man stood outside in the shadow of the trees, and we done turn and turn about sleeping. We got a reasonable night's sleep in. And we didn't leave. We left the farm mid-morning, I would think it would be. Probably around about 10-ish. And we came out of the farm, turned to our right, and decided to follow the track, but not keeping on the track, keeping a few yards off the track. We followed this track for a while and eventually came out of the forest into open countryside with the fields and hedgerows. And keeping in the shade of the hedge, we continued down the track for some mile or so. And suddenly a voice rang out some 200 yards in front of us. And the voice yelled out, "Corporal Godbold!" And we were lucky. We had walked right back into our own company position in Heruvalet. Full stop. Yes, we went right back into the welcoming arms of our own company. And I can't remember who said it, but we passed through a post slit trench on the side of this road, and the chap said, "Have you just come down this road?" And we said, "Yes, we followed this road." I said, "And as soon as we heard the shout for Corporal Godbold, we came out onto the track and we walked right down the track." He said, "Well, they've had those small mines laid across the road," he said. He said, "It's a wonder you didn't have your feet blown off. They were little mines, somewhat like a round tape, you know, flexible tape, but about the size of a flexible tape, and they just used to plant them under the surface." And it was our lucky day all round. And Claude Godbold, he was overjoyed to see me, because he was a close friend of my family's as well, and he thought that he'd had the task of writing home to my mother and telling her that I'd been killed. But casting back to Eskerville, I asked them how Ginger Radford was, and Jimmy St. Clair, who had been very, very close to me at the time that I thought I'd fallen asleep. And he said that they were both missing. And I said, "Well, they certainly weren't in Eskerville when I came round." And it transpired later, through inquiries with the Red Cross, that they were both taken prisoner of war. One, Ginger Radford, was within 2 yards of me, and Jimmy St. Clair, he would have been about 4 or 5 yards away, I can only assume that I'd been left for dead by the Germans. And that's it.
Were you pulled out because of the injury to your ear?
No, I carried on. And we went right through the day of the 8th. Claude had a small bottle of whiskey, which he gave me half in a mug, which was most welcome. And we sat and had a chat about old times and how good it was to be alive. And then I was sent forward that night, Private Clive and myself went forward as a standing patrol in the direction of the woods and along the edge of the track that we just returned from. And we were about 100 yards in front of our chaps, and it was very eerie out there. And every bush was moving, every bush was a German. It was that sort of situation. And we spent quite a few hours out there, and we were very, very glad to be relieved and come back to the company and get into a slit trench and have a bit of protection around us. The following day, we got some reasonable food, because by this time they'd got the more solid combo rations up, the tinned stuff, tinned rice, cheese, a decent cup of tea. And we felt like new men, but I was having spells where I was extremely dizzy all the time. And we went right through the 8th, and it was on the morning of the 9th that I think I must have blacked out several times, because I went down to see the MO, and he said, he gave me a couple of pills actually, and said, have a sleep on a stretcher in the MI room, you know, or whatever it was, first aid room. I had to sleep and I felt okay, and I went back to the company, by which time there were all the signs of a German attack developing. There was some shelling started up, mortaring, not a lot of small arms fire, all coming from the direction of Eskerville. And we were strafed by some German planes. I believe they were Messerschmitt 109s. And shortly after that, the shelling got very heavy, and tank movement, armoured car movement, were seen coming across the fields from the direction of Eskerville. This would have been about 7 o'clock in the evening. And it transpired that we were right. The Germans put in a very, very fierce attack. But we, fortunately, by now were able to call down a good artillery chute onto Eskerville and onto the Germans who were advancing on us. And we were delighted to see that two of the German tanks were knocked out and several of the armoured cars were hit. And the attack was broken up. We in turn as a company, excuse me, we in turn as a company also put down a good volume of small arms fire, and the enemy attack petered out, broke up, and the rest of the evening was fairly quiet. But
what day is this?
This is on the 9th, actually, the 9th of June. And it was on the 10th, I'm pretty certain it was the 10th, I had two or three occasions where I completely blacked out. And one chap I've since found out after the war mentioned to me that I'd been asking about going on leave a 48-hour pass, so I must have been in a pretty funny way. But anyway, I saw the company sergeant major, who Corporal Godbold had informed, and he ordered me to go and see the MO. So I went to see the MO, and he said, well, I'll send you back a bit so you can have a good examination. And our company jeep took me down to an advanced dressing station, I would think. And I had a night's sleep there. I felt okay in the morning. So I wandered back. I got off the stretcher and didn't say a word to anyone. I wandered back to the company at the Rouvalet, but they'd all gone. When I got there, there was I think it was the 13th, 12th or 13th Parrot Battalion there. So I said, well, where are they gone? They said they'd gone to Chateau St. Com. So I wandered back to Ronville and picked up the route to Chateau St. Com, which was some distance away. And I got back to the company and I was feeling real groggy by this time. I didn't know whether I was coming or going. And I was immediately ordered by John Howard to go back to the MI room. So I went back to the MI room and lay in turn. I got a rollicking from Captain Smith, the MO, for leaving the previous dressing station. And I was promptly packed on a jeep and sent back to another advanced dressing station. And this dressing station was strafed, I think, by RAF. And I went out like a light. I don't know what it was, an explosion or whether it was another attack of this dizziness I was having. And I woke up in Newcastle General Hospital with severe concussion and a perforated eardrum. And that ended my... And that was the 15th of June by then. So I'd lost a couple of days. I don't know where they were.
Now, I know that you eventually went back into action at the time of the notorious German offensive in the Ardennes. What do you remember about that?
Well, a rather strange thing, this, because the 22nd of December was my birthday. That's 1944. And we were preparing to Thumber left home for Christmas. We knew nothing about a German attack in the Ardennes, you know. Newspapers on Salisbury Plain were very scarce. Radios were non-existent. So news was pretty grim. We never got any news. And on the night of my birthday, it was a Lieutenant Wright, then had taken over 24 Platoon, came and said, we've got to pack our kit, he said, and be prepared to move tomorrow. We're going overseas. And then it came out that the Germans had mounted a big offensive and that we were going to go over by sea to act as a defence force. So bang went our hopes of going home to Dagenham for Christmas. So Corporal Godbold, who by this time was a sergeant, he'd been made up to a sergeant, we decided to go out to the Rose and Crown at Bulford and drink whatever beer they got available on my birthday. So we went to the Rose and Crown and we had a good drink of bitter, which wasn't very good beer. And then Sergeant Godbold said he'd go to the sergeant's mess and see if he could get his month's drinks ration, which he got was a bottle of gin and a bottle of port, which the two of us, during the course of the evening, finished off. By this time, we were both paralytic drunk, and this is gospel. I couldn't walk and he couldn't walk. And we spent half the night sitting under a tree. Anyway, we got back to barracks and staggered on parade, fully kitted out with all our battle gear the following morning. God knows how we done it. And we went by train to Dover. Arriving at Dover, we were put on one of these boat train ships. And we went across on this and it was a terrible sea and we were violently sick, the pair of us. But it got rid of all the drink from the previous night. It's the most ghastly trip I've ever had in my life. But Charlie felt exactly the same. But when we arrived at Calais, something was wrong. We were shuttled off to Boulogne. And from Boulogne, I think, we got the train to Calais, where we spent the night in a hut there. This is the night of the 23rd. On the night of on dur during the 23rd, we started night of the 20 during the 24th of December, we started the trip across Belgium by lorry and arrived on Christmas Eve at a small town called Waregem, I think it's pronounced. It's a famous race course town in Belgium, where we were accommodated in the local houses in the town. I can recall that myself and Jess Cheesley, Private Cheesley, we were given a huge four-poster bed, and we had a wonderful night's sleep there after the locals had plied us with whatever they'd been distilling. The following morning, which was Christmas Day, we were paraded fairly early and commenced the drive across the Belgian Ardennes. We arrived fairly late at night, and our sole meal for the whole day consisted of a slice of dry bread and a spoonful of some kind of fish, and that was our Christmas dinner and the sole meal we got that day. We arrived on the banks of the Meuse. We'd crossed into France by then, arrived in the town of Givet in northern France in the early hours of Boxing Day morning, and were immediately put into position guarding the bridge across the Meuse and setting up machine gun posts across the bridge and establishing patrols along the riverbank to keep a watchful eye on what was going on.
How do you spell the name of this place?
Givet, Givet. It's in northern France. It's a little finger of land that juts into Belgium. It's about 10 miles from Dinant in Belgium. Yes, while we were establishing the patrols along the river bank and across the bridge, the Americans were streaming across the bridge in their hundreds, could have even been thousands. And although there were only about 130 of us in D Company, I was very amused to hear one American bloke say, "Glad to see you boys," he said, and they outnumbered us by at least 10 to 1, and they were really happy to see us, and they were retreating across the bridges. Well, we stayed in this position for 4 or 5 days. There were German patrol movement on the opposite bank of the river, but no attacks of any kind and no firing. 2 or 3 days later, I went down with a violent dose of flu with a temperature of 103, and was confined to the medical centre, where I was greeted by Captain Smith, who said, "What, you again?" And I said, "Yes." And he put me to bed and gave me some antibiotics, and I stayed there for 2 nights, and then the battalion was ordered to move. So Captain Smith said, "Well, go back to your company commander and get a lift on the jeep." He said, "You're not fit to march." So I saw the company commander, who was not John Howard, because John Howard had a bad accident in England, had been knocked out. And I said to the company commander, "Well, can I have a ride on the jeep?" And he said, "No, you've got to walk." So I commenced the best part of a 10-mile march through fairly heavy snow. We were going to Dinant, or just outside Dinant, to a village called Drihance. And at the end of the 10-mile march, which was a bit of a nightmare, I discovered that my flu had gone completely. I was cured. God knows how. I must have sweated it out, but I was as fit as a fiddle when we arrived. In Drihance, we were billeted in various houses around the village, and we took up a position alternating nights up in the big chateau, the Chateau Valsin, which at one time was frequented by the Belgian royalty. They had a wonderful wine cellar there, and the caretaker kindly gave us some bottles which were extremely good. But it was a wonderful experience staying there because they had huge log fires blazing. But our viewpoint was about 200 foot above the river. It was a sheer drop.
How do you spell the name of the chateau?
Valsing. It's W-A-L... I don't know whether it's S-I-N or Z-I-N. But it's at a village called Drehance.
How do you spell that?
D-R-E... H-A-N-C-E, I think. It's a quiet little village, not too far from the town of Dinant. And there we stayed for several days, and then we moved forward to a village called Rochefort, where there was a huge monastery. Still no sign of contact with the enemy, although there were a few bodies, tanks, a huge Tiger tank in one place, but we actually did not get engaged in any fighting at all. And from Rochefort, we done a bit of patrol activity, but no actual fighting. Our worst enemy was the snow. It was so deep and so cold, so intensely cold. And we just patrolled there in that area until we were withdrawn and driven across to Belgium into Holland to an area around the town of Venlo on the banks of the Maas there, which is the same river as the Meuse, isn't it? And there we stayed till roughly about the 23rd of February, during which time I lost my good friend Sergeant Godbold. He'd gone forward on a patrol across the river and never returned, with a Lieutenant Baudinet, a Canadian officer, and I didn't know what his fate was. There'd been a bit of firing, so we assumed that he'd been killed. And I think it was on the 24th of... On the 24th of February 1945, we went back to England by sea. We had another rough crossing on a flat-bottomed tank landing craft and returned to Bulford Camp and leave.
Now, can you tell me again in detail your own personal memories of the Rhine crossing? This is March 1945.
Yes, certainly. After returning from leave, beginning of March, we had a whole new batch of reinforcements in. The older members of the company, a lot of them had disappeared, killed, wounded and missing. We were reinforced by a large amount of reinforcements, and most of the company were new faces. We started training again, a very short period of training, and then word got around that there was another operation coming up shortly, and we prepared for battle again. One day in March, about the 10 days into March, I would think it was, 10 to 12 days into March, we'd done a rehearsal for this next airborne operation. And we took off from an airfield in Essex, near Bury St Edmunds, and circled around for several hours, forming up. And just as we were in the process of returning to the airfield, our glider had to cast off. It ran into the slipstream of the Stirling tug, and the turbulence forced the glider pilot to cast off, and we landed in a small town called March in Cambridgeshire. I believe we landed in a recreational ground, and the nose of the glider went through into the mayor's back garden. So we were invited in to his house, and I can recall having boiled eggs for food. And we had the freedom of march for the rest of the day then, until late evening when some lorries arrived to transport us back to Balfour. At the end of the third week in March, we went from Balfour to a concentration area, again near Bury St Edmunds. And on the morning of the 24th, we were driven to the airfield in Essex called Birch. That's B-I-R-C-H, where we emplaned in the Horsa gliders, and these were towed by Stirlings again. Roughly about 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:15 in the morning, we took off, and we were in the air for some four and a quarter hours at least. Most of the time was spent in forming up the formations of gliders in the correct order of battle. It was a heck of a task for the pilots and glider pilots, I should imagine. Anyway, eventually we arrived over the continent, and word went round that we were about to cross the Rhine, and I don't know our exact height, but I estimate that we were about 5,000 or 6,000 feet, because the Rhine itself was just a tiny silver slither way below us. And we crossed, and the tugs cast off. The reinforcements appeared to be quite happy, but all the older hands were a bit apprehensive. They'd done it before, and they didn't fancy it somehow. There was a sense of foreboding among us that something nasty was in the wind. And we guessed right, because shortly after that we heard the glider pilot shout, "I can't see the landing field," he said, "it's obscured by smoke." And he went down into dense smoke. We just couldn't see the ground at all. We were looking out the little portholes. And suddenly we hit the ground with a terrific whack. We bounced. The wheels came off. We skidded along on the skid. I think we lost 1.5 wings on the way down.